Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Juliette Talevi, and joining me on the line this evening are Meryl Pick from Old Mutual Investments and Alex Dace from Umtumba Wealth. If you'd like to send those questions, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. First, though, insights from Bloomberg. Rabobank's head of FX strategy, Jane Foley, expects bond market volatility to spill over into the rest of the markets in the next year. Take a watch.
Well, to be honest, you know, the way I've been looking at volatility really for the last few years since the global financial crisis is that when we have that quantitative easing and an awful lot of policy accommodation, it's like a comfort blanket for the markets. It takes away some of the volatility, some of the fear, some of the risks when you've got so much cheap money. So once we're into an environment which we're entering into now, where some of that safety blanket is going to be gradually lessened, then I think naturally we're going to get more volatility. And I think for foreign exchange, I think next year we will have a lot more, because I think there's going to be different reactions from central banks. Not all labour markets, again, are created equal, and we will see that coming through into wage inflation pressures, into CPI inflation pressures, and then into the build-up for what different central banks are going to do in terms of coping with inflation or not. So I think we're going to have quite a bit more volatility in foreign exchange in 2022.
Meryl, Alex, good to see you both here this evening. Meryl, if I may start with you, and just to pick up very briefly on what Jane Foley was talking about. You're saying that the safety blanket of quantitative easing has been gradually drawn away from the markets and expected to have this volatile impact on, she was talking specifically currencies, but I imagine it's going to filter through into all asset classes in the next financial year. Is it something that long-term investors who look at company fundamentals have to pay that much attention to? Or do you have to acknowledge this is going to be going on in the background of the markets, but what a company's cash flows look like, what its price to book or price to earnings ratio is about, is more important really than kind of this overarching theme?
Yes, really, there are two, I would agree with her. There are two ways to look at it, in my view. If you're looking for opportunities, volatility is generally great. So volatility means better entry points often into shares with strong long-term fundamentals. So that's the one kind of fundamental view as a stock picker. But then it does make for, I suppose, an argument for more conservative portfolio construction. So while you are picking those stocks, be quite careful in terms of how you blend them, depending on your appetite for a roller coaster. So things like currency, or considering the mix of defensives versus cyclicals, you know, in the portfolio. But generally speaking, volatility is actually good in my opinion.
Yeah, certainly the traders will agree with you. Alex, I don't know, your thoughts, or do you think this volatility in currencies is going to have a negative effect on the rand, or just a volatile effect, which of course would influence maybe the entry points at which you buy shares that are particularly rand sensitive?
Well, look, I mean, volatility has been very low pretty much since the global financial crisis. That's also when I started in the market more than 13 years ago. So I think a lot of, as soon as this excess liquidity is removed from the system, a lot of investors that will have 10, 15 years experience will never have been in a market where they didn't have this type of manipulation, I guess, of asset class prices and so forth. So certainly it can have a material impact on asset class prices globally as well as locally. Signs, of course, seeing some tapering happening, but it's still going to be in for a period of lots of fiscal as well as monetary stimulus going forward, but it's going to have a big impact. So at the moment, volatility every now and again does pick up. It's usually when there's something that is spooking the markets and so forth. It tends to lead to a big sell-off, and that's exactly when, as Meryl refers to, where active managers can make some value for their clients. Yeah. And then slowly you start seeing the market trending upwards again on low volatility. That's just because of the excess liquidity. Money has to go somewhere. And if you've got negative real yields in Europe and so forth, you have to buy equities. So as a result, that has pushed valuations to very high levels, which makes it very vulnerable at some stage in the future. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get to company news of the day, because there was a fair bit to chew over, and there were some fairly extreme moves, you could say, in the share prices. And of course, the big deal of the day was the Heineken tilt at Distell. They've been in talks for quite a few months now. And the one viewer says, puzzling market reaction today, because Distell shares sold off quite aggressively. On the back of the anticipated Heineken offer, it's given up the gains since market speculation began. And I'm wondering whether this is some profit taking today, or market expectation of value over the long term that this acquisition represents. Meryl, what do you think? It's just firstly that it's come in at a lower price. I mean, if you take the component parts of the deal into account, and it is fairly complicated, it's not just a straight all cash offer. Here's your Distell shares. This is what Heineken's getting. I mean, if I understand it correctly, actually it's 180 Rand if it's the Distell offer, 165 Rand, and then 15 Rand worth of Capevin shares, if I'm understanding this correctly. But the market obviously expected more, or does the market not like the structure of the deal, because there's so many, you can either take cash or you can take shares in the new company. What is it that the market didn't like?
That's difficult to say. I haven't looked at the structure of the deal in detail, but I would say if the sell-off is an indication of value coming under market expectations, that would be, for me, the most straightforward answer. There's obviously been speculation about the premium that would be paid. Alcohol sales have been phenomenal despite the several lockdowns in the country, so you could argue, you know, this strong market, so perhaps people's expectations were quite rich.
Yeah, I mean, I did see, I think, a price of 200 Rand bandied about. Maybe that's what some people were expecting. Alex, I don't know if you had a closer look at it and what you would recommend to investors. So would you take the cash offer? Do you want to take a partial offer, in which case you would have shares in an unlisted entity? I mean, how savvy is that? And what would the benefit of that be?
Yeah, so I also looked at the deal mostly from a Remgro perspective, because that's where we are shareholders. Okay. In the business. So I think from Remgro perspective, it does make sense. They've been looking to offload this deal, the stake, for quite some time, ever since PIC pulled a trick on him to buy the majority stake in Distell a few years ago. So what is will help for Remgro, of course, is it does give them an immediate value uplift, as well as that this stake become an unlisted part of the portfolio as well. Is exactly what Remgro is looking for. And also, I can see a lot of synergies between Heineken and Distell. It makes sense to want to hold a strategic stake from Remgro perspective in such a business, instead of just taking the cash and perhaps have something that you can't really look to buy. So I'm still very constructive from a Remgro perspective. I think from a personal general investor, I can only talk from my own perspective, I would certainly rather prefer to take the cash as to having a unlisted instrument that, you know, you're going to struggle to trade over time and so forth.
And just on the price, do you think it was disappointing? I mean, if you were a Distell shareholder, would you be disappointed?
Look, I mean, obviously there's, you know, there's a lot of speculators in the moment in there looking to make a quick buck, a lot of hedge funds, perhaps traders as well. And, you know, somehow the 200 Rand number was mooted in the media. I think it's for me a relatively fair price, and specifically if you look at the major shield from Remgro perspective, they are still going to have a stake in the business, which is going to have good synergies going forward. So I think it's a fair price, and the share price has, of course, rallied quite a lot, even since the announcement of the corporate action.
Meryl, can I ask you, would a savvy thing be to, if you were a Distell shareholder, to sell to tender your shares and get the cash offer, and then actually maybe use some of that cash to buy Remgro shares, because then you would have, you know, access to this company that Heineken is obviously betting quite a lot on, has a lot of expectations for. So then you would still have some sort of future option on the growth in the, you know, the cider and the beer markets in South Africa and Africa.
That is a tempting idea. I suppose you would have to look at how much that exposure is being diluted by the other assets, you know, in the Remgro stable, which would, yeah, be probably quite significantly, and whether you want to also own those assets, or if you would prefer to just play the beverage market, you know, a different way.
Okay. Okay. And then just before I get to CAP and DataTech, there's two questions on that. I just wanted to talk about ShopRite briefly. What a stonking update that, you know, they didn't even need to account for the disruptions caused by the July riots. I mean, they've just sailed through that. The share's up 6%. Alex, I mean, and Meryl, I'll get Alex starting with you. I mean, they just blow one away. They are in a class of their own, it seems.
Certainly, Julieta. Now, how refreshing it is to see a company finally reporting numbers without not referring to some sort of one source and the like. So this really shows you how great operational performance was for ShopRite. So certainly gaining market share, there's no doubt about it. You know, this is a business that's really firing a full cylinder, and it seems like they're able to tweak it even further. So very, very impressive update, in my opinion. Valuation is not as fair as it's always been, but you know, this is the type of business you're willing to hold long term, and I don't have any sleepless nights holding ShopRite at the moment.
Yeah, Meryl. I mean, you had a very SA focused portfolio, and I imagine ShopRite was quite, I can't remember if it was a big component, but I imagine it would have been. Have you stuck by your ShopRite, and would you stick by your ShopRite on the basis of something like this?
We are very happy holders of ShopRite today, in particular. So we look at things through two lenses, through theme and price. As Alexa said, the price, you know, is not as attractive as it was a year ago, or when we entered the share somewhere around 140. But we still see the themes that we bought into playing strongly, playing out. The one was this market share angle, particularly with Checkers, where they're trying to take on, let's say, the more affluent consumer from Woolies Food and compete there. That seems to be working very well, supported by the digital. But the other strong theme was actually just a focus on returns and balance sheet metrics, whereas in the past, the management team was highly focused on growth, top-line growth. And that has driven some decisions, exiting some territories in Africa, rationalizing the property portfolio, and they're channeling that money. We've seen the Massmart deal. We've seen the investment in 60/60, and this pet segment is actually quite interesting. So they've got an eye on emerging trends, I think, and that is starting to pay off. So in our opinion, the themes are still quite strong here, though the price is not as attractive. So we are holding on.
We want to have a look at UK equity markets. They were set to outperform this year, but a turn in the macro environment has changed that sentiment. However, Andrew Pinder, head of investment banking at Investec, says there's still value to be found in the UK market heading into 2022.
We've certainly not seen any decline in global interest coming in for UK stocks. I think people are still picking up on that underperformance that you've referenced. We certainly had expected to see a stronger year. So the attention is still there. People are still looking for those catalysts. There are some strong stories. So there's certainly UK companies, for instance, that are performing incredibly well in the US. A number of people, you know, spring to mind there, people like JD Sports, Fevertree, GB Group, Craneware. All these companies are UK listed companies with strong overseas activities. So I think it's important to reference the fact there's lots of companies that are not just tied to the UK economy. And then within the UK economy, I think there's a lot of interest around how the consumer spend patterns are going to come through.
Meryl, I'm just starting with you. I'm not sure if you pay close attention to the UK stock market as an option, or if you look at some South African listed stocks that have particularly weighty exposure, or the entire business is in the UK. And I'm thinking Hammerson or Capco, Bytes. Actually, Alex was saying during the break, even Supergroup, you know, has a sort of UK logistics operation. Any particular thoughts on the UK markets and next year? Might there be some shares there that you would want to be looking at?
I don't keep a close eye on the UK market. I think some things to think about, maybe in opposite directions. The UK has rolled out vaccinations very well, very efficiently, and they've, you know, been able to open up, whereas some other developed markets like Australia, for example, have still been experiencing lockdowns in recent times. So that should bode well just for the the reopening trade and the recovery there. So if I think, for example, as you say, the supergroups, some of our local retailers like the Foschini Group, that's got exposure there. But at the same time, we've seen the Bank of England hold rates, which seem to surprise industry commentators. And to me, that is perhaps a comment on just cautious, them being cautious about the strength of the recovery. So that was an interesting decision that says maybe there's some underlying concerns.
Issues. Well, I'm sure, you know, Brexit is probably a great overlying concern because it was sort of out of keeping with what other central banks were expected to do. Alex, any thoughts on companies with big UK exposure going into next year?
Yeah, I mean, if I just think about the FTSE 100, I actually do like it. You can, of course, buy the ETF here locally as well. For the last 4 years, it's underperformed most other developed market countries. But if you look at some of the quality stocks that's in the FTSE 100, I mean, you've got some of your big pharmaceuticals, your AstraZeneca's, you've got Diageo, HSBC, Royal Dutch Shell, British American Tobacco, and so forth. So it's certainly companies that make most of their earnings outside of the UK as well. But if you're looking for specifically a recovery of the UK economy, then something like the FTSE 250, which is more the smaller mid-cap stocks in the UK, probably a better fit for that. Mm. Locally, they don't have a lot of options. I mean, you've referred to a few there, but I guess our preferred play is still Capital Counties.
Okay.
We think of tourism recovering. We see, for example, in the UK, if you look at sporting events, it's full houses and so forth. Tourism also recover, and as a result, those high-quality assets that's well-positioned, well-located, we think will do well, over the medium to long term.
Yeah. Okay. Well, moving back to the South African market, and there's a question on banks and retailers. Why are banks so miserable but retailers shine? I would expect that the banks should follow the retailers generally, and generally they do. Meryl, can you explain why there's this maybe slight divergence with the caveat that maybe retailers have shone, but they've come off their highs from earlier this year, certainly, if you look at TFG, for example.
Yeah. They have, and they do, tend to move together. I suppose we've seen quite strong earnings and top-line performance from most of the retailers. And at the same time, banks are exposed more broadly to the economy. So they're exposed to all sectors, corporate, consumer credit, and any time that there is some sort of overhang or concern about South Africa in general, it tends to show up in financial services. So I'm not entirely surprised that there's been a bit of a lag. If you think, for example, the resurgence of load shedding, etc., it just casts doubt on the long-term recovery of South Africa. We think that there's still sufficient green shoots to have confidence in the banks, but the earnings will have to continue to come through. So they're still sitting on a lot of provisioning for bad debts, which did not materialize. And that has to, be unwound over time, whereas the retailers are just more about top line. It's a lot more straightforward.
Yeah. Alex, would you be buying, would you buy the banks over the retailers or vice versa? Are banks going to be sort of steady but not particularly exciting?
Yes, I agree with that. So from a sector perspective, we do prefer the banks over the retailers. That doesn't mean there isn't any opportunities in the retail space, but more specific that we are looking for there. But in the broadly based, we think the banks, as Meryl referred to, are well capitalized, well provisioned, valuation certainly ain't excessive, and doesn't really need, not a lot needs to happen for banks to valuations to really pick up from here. So I think we're comfortable holding there. Something like a Standard Bank looks quite attractive for us. If you look, and you've got Nedbank, which is more tied to the commercial side of South Africa, less to the retail. And then if you look at the retail space, certainly, think of Foschini and Woolworths, they sold off mostly due to what happened in Australia as well with the lockdowns. And so it was more company-specific issues. Mm-hmm. Where the price, of course, is more locally based, has sold off a little bit, and we thought actually have an opportunity. So there's more about stock picking, I would say, within the retailer space compared to banks, which is more broad-based.
Okay. All right. Then moving to two small cap stocks, Cap and Datatec. well, CAP in particular. And the viewer says, I bought CAP at R4.70. It went to a high of R5, but has since been on a decline, currently on R4.30. Is this still a buy to top up, or should I cut my losses and exit? I get the impression this is a trader, because I suppose we're talking about cents here. Meryl, I don't know if, I imagine neither of you are, your focus is more long-term. I mean, would that be a bit unwise? It seems to me to be kind of, maybe give it a chance.
Absolutely. So I think it's a little bit of a short-term reaction for me. So some of the key drivers for CAP, one of the key drivers is their chemicals business. And with oil prices where they are now, I'm expecting very strong earnings out of that polymer business. So Safripol, that's the first point that I would make. But also with the congestion that we've seen at ports, etc., part of a CAP's business model over time has been displacing imports in various segments. So, for example, within bedding or furniture. And with everything that we've seen at the ports, supply chain bottlenecks, anything that's got exposure to local manufacture is gaining market share at this stage. So there's strong themes in place for this one. The price is not excessive. I would definitely be holding on.
Yeah. Alex, how about you? I mean, you know, there is an interesting push towards local manufacturing. I mean, TFG, I think a lot more of their manufacturing is going to be locally a lot more of their product is locally sourced, which is really encouraging. So there is a bit of maybe a resurgence in SA manufacturing. Do you have a view on CAP, or do you want to move on to Datatec?
Yeah, I agree with Meryl on CAP. Certainly at these levels, doesn't look expensive at all. Manufacturing, as she refers to, also looking quite good. Obviously, load shedding is having a problem, and of course, our labor, there's risks to be aware of, but these guys are, you know, very experienced, and they know how to handle those risks. Datatec is a company that's done very, very well as well over the last 3 to 6 months. I think the stock is up, makes us about 40% or so. They obviously focus a lot on networks and security and cloud infrastructure. And there's a distributor of these business, of these products, right? So it's a very global business. But very interesting for me from Datatec perspective is they're looking to do some value unlock. So I actually got in some experts that can help to assess them, how they can perhaps unlock some value in a business, perhaps sell some non-core assets and the likes. So Datatec, even though it's rallied, certainly not expensive, and if compared to global peers, it's trading at quite a big discount. There's a business, of course, that has historically underperformed operationally. It tends to be very high operational earnings leverage, meaning small change in revenue does have a big impact on bottom line. So a bit of a volatile share, but certainly not expensive, and can generate very good cash flows under good circumstances. So
yeah,
even though I don't know Datatec at the moment, I'm constructive on the business.
Yeah. Meryl, any quick comment there? I mean, it has had an incredible rally since July. I mean, it's almost doubled in price. But do you think you could still get in expectation of more value coming out of this thing?
I don't have a strong feel for valuation on it at this stage, but it tends to move as a multiplier to global GDP. And so as long as GDP is on an upward trend, then that's positive for it. And if, you know, there's M&A unlock, that would just be a sweetener.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to get to your topics now. Meryl, if I may start with you, what are you keen on at the moment?
Yes, we are quite keen on hospitals, which have been the cyclical defensive of the pandemic. So normally in a crisis, you think healthcare is defensive, and yet even in the midst of a pandemic, hospitals have not been the place to hide, because of course elective surgeries and all the additional protocols in hospitals have meant negative operating leverage, margin pressure, top line pressure, etc. But I think as we're coming out, as vaccinations are rolling out, I am picking Netcare today. Very much almost a pure play on South African hospitals at this stage. We should see pent-up demand for elective surgeries. They've got a robust balance sheet. Occupancies should be recovering from here. And this is, you know, not really part of the base case, but I have a theory that we've spent so much time in a sterile bubble that things like the flu and those sort of respiratory diseases might just surprise us on the downside as patients, but on the upside as hospitals.
Yeah. Okay. So, so what was sickly and defensive might be cyclical defensive. Okay. So that's the thesis for Netcare. Alex, how about you?
Yes, I'm going for process. So Tencent Q3 results were out last week. Obviously, as expected, it wasn't a particularly great set of results, but I think there's a lot of evidence in there that it does seem like they are nearing the type of bottom of the cycle here. If you look at the amount of investment they're putting into the business, the number of staff they're hiring, and actual investing costs in the business, margins are eroding at the moment, as well as advertising businesses, perhaps, but more on a cyclical low end as well. I think there is room for recovery there. Obviously, very good prospects in its fintech business as well as a gaming business continues to do well. And we know all the negative sentiment that's been happening and all the regulatory risks that's happened in China. We look at evaluation, exclude the associates, which is very material. It's trading about a forward P of about 14. That is Tencent. So I just think it's too enticing. And as a result, process being at quite a good discount to Tencent, plus other parts of process looking attractive. Yeah. I think if you are looking for long-term entry point, this is time to buy now.
Okay, great. We shall leave it there. Alex, Meryl, very nice to see you both this evening. Thanks very much for joining us. Meryl Peck is from Old Mutual Investments. Alex Dace is from Umtumba Wealth. And Bright, text more of your stock-related questions tomorrow night. Have a good evening. We'll be right back.